Working the evening shift at a highway gas station is exactly what it's cut out to be. It's all cleaning bathrooms, selling cigarettes, and making sure nobody drives off with the gas nozzle still in the tank. But most of all, it's a lot of small talk. I remember when Todd, the manager, interviewed me for the job. He never asked me anything. We just talked about sports, his wife's cooking, and Hunter S. Thompson. I thought the interview was a bit odd at the time, but looking back, he was just vetting my small talk skills. But as much as I like shooting the breeze, my favourite time of the day is when the customers start dying off, which is around 6 on a weekday and 8 on a weekend. That's when you get to kick back, listen to the radio, pick up a book, and if you're bored, chew over anything interesting you might have heard from one of the customers that day. The gas station is located right at a fork in the highway. If you keep going straight, you're going on a new highway, the 301. If you hook right, then you're on the old one, the 93, which takes you through Windermere. Taking the 93 adds an extra 40 minutes of travel time, so nobody but the people who live in Old Windermere take it. You might think that most of my customers are people passing by on the 301, but it's actually locals returning from work from out of town. Since the new highway was constructed, most people work out of town. One of these locals is a guy named Red, who comes to the station with his semi-truck every second day. He talks a lot without asking me much, which is my favourite type of folk. But one day, I noticed he was acting different, quieter. This went on for a couple of weeks, until I decided to fish for a reason. "Hey Chase, what's going on?" he hollered as he entered the store. He does that every time, yelling out for me before he even sees me. "Hey Red, not much, you?" I put my book down and wiggled the computer mouse to refresh the screen. "Yeah, not much either. Put 70 on," he said as he slapped 100 down on the counter. He leaned forward with an elbow on the counter and looked idly over his shoulder at the chip aisle. "How's the wife?" "Fine." "That's good. I'm glad to hear it. And the job?" "Just as fine." "Great. And the truck? Is the engine acting up again?" Red turned towards me and snapped, "What is this, the goddamn Inquisition?" "Sorry, Red. Didn't mean to pry. You just seemed off lately, that's all." I plucked a 20 and a 10 and handed it to him. He folded the bills into his pocket and sighed. "Ah, jeez. You're a good kid, Chase. You remind me of my own, only he graduated high school a year before you and still hasn't found a job. But between you and me, I'm not doing too hot. Jane, my wife, her Uncle Thomas went missing a couple weeks ago. Did you hear about that?" He took off his hat and rubbed the last orange tussle of hair left on his head. Looking at him, I noticed for the first time the heavy bags under his eyes. "No, I hadn't heard about that. I heard about Abigail, but that's it. I'm sorry, Red, I had no clue." "Yeah, all anybody's heard about is that little girl Abigail. I pray to God she comes home, just as much as anyone else. But there's been 11 disappearances in Windermere. And I bet you didn't know that, because all anybody talks about is Abby." He let out another sigh and put the cap back on his head. "You be careful getting home at night, okay? Something not right is going on here." He looked at me gravely, waiting for a reply. I told him I'd be careful, and to that he nodded his head and left the store. That was the last I ever saw of him. After Red left, only a couple customers came in that night. This meant that I had plenty of time to go on my phone and look into what he told me. Turns out, he was right. There had been 11 people in Windermere declared missing in less than a month. It was strange for so many people to go missing in a town of that size. But what was even weirder was that, other than Abigail, they were all elderly. It depressed me a lot looking at their faces. They had all been so vulnerable. Midnight rolled around and I didn't waste a minute closing shop. I usually lock up and sit inside for half an hour, killing time before I have to catch the 12:45 bus. But I felt a bit cooped up that evening, so I decided to wait at the bus stop. It being May, the weather was warm and the skies clear. There are no streetlights on the stretch of highway between the station and the bus stop, but that night, the moon was full enough to cast shadows. The moonlight brightened the treetops that line the road, making the tree line look really nice against the starry sky. However, the forest remained dark. North, through that dense woods, is the old hospital. It hasn't been a hospital for 15 years now, but that doesn't mean it's empty. The story that kids tell each other these days is that the building is now an insane asylum for the most hopeless, incurable sorts. It's filled with serial killers, bloodthirsty cannibals, and deformed mutants who are more animal than man. It's the same story that was told when I was a kid. I remember being relieved as hell when I heard it was actually a private research center called Geoforce, with a focus on renewable energy. But no matter how boring the reality of that building was said to be, I was never able to look into that forest after nightfall. You never really truly grow out of your childhood fears. Although the forest always creeps me out, that night was worse than usual. I couldn't shake the feeling that something was watching me. Every snap of a twig or rustle of a branch made me pick up my pace and curse under my breath. Sometimes I could swear that I heard a low growl coming from the bushes. I told myself that I was just being paranoid, that I read too much bad news on the internet earlier. But when I saw my bus stop illuminated in the distance, I couldn't help but sprint towards it. The bus stop has one of those advertisement screens that are lit up from underneath by fluorescent tubes. For years, it's been the same advertisement for a tire shop on the West End. As I ran, I used that picture of the stack of tires as my finish line, and I was only a few feet away when a piercing screech came from the woods. I spun around to look into the trees, but caught my foot on a rock and fell. I hurried back to my feet, and when I turned to the bus stop, someone was sitting on the bench. It was so unexpected that, I'm embarrassed to say, I let out a little shriek. She didn't move when I screamed, not even to look at me. At the time, I thought she was just trying to save my pride. "I'm sorry, miss. Hope it didn't startle you. I didn't see you there, that's all." I forced out a laugh, but she didn't look at me. I stepped closer to the bus stop. "Mind if I sit with you?" I looked at my phone. "We still got half an hour." I waited for an answer, and when none came, I came over and sat next to her anyway. I pulled out my phone and was in the middle of some news article when a passing breeze brought something nasty with it. Bending one foot towards me, I inspected my shoe, and then the other. They were clean. I realized, to my horror, that the smell was coming from the lady beside me. "Are you feeling all right?" I blurted. She smelt like a pile of dead leaves and fresh crap. Old people have accidents, I thought to myself. It's normal, and she looked quite old and familiar, but I couldn't tell if I knew her or not, since she would not turn to look at me. I knew full well it's rude to stare, but at this point, I couldn't help it. She looked so disheveled, like she had been living rough, even though her clothes were expensive. Her black dress shoes, along with the bottom of her pants, were caked in dry mud. She also had pine needles in her hair, what looked to be sap, smeared across the shoulder of her coat. "Miss?" I said as I reached out to touch her arm. But something in my gut made me recall my hand. Call it survival instinct. With trembling hands, I turned on my phone and tried to open the call app, but I kept pressing the wrong app. The bench squeaked as she scooted towards me. I opened the call app, but my fingers were shaking and I couldn't open the keypad. She moved closer to me again. The smell was overwhelming, and I muffled my nose with my jacket sleeve. I opened the keypad pressed the number 9, and then 1, and then looked towards her. She was looking straight at me, with terrible, awful, bloodshot eyes that had what looked like holes drilled into them. One hole was smaller than the other, lined with a thin circle of icy blue, a blue iris. They weren't holes. They were her pupils, large and mismatched. You don't know how much an eye can tell you about a person, about their soul, until you're looking into dead ones. And she was dead. No two ways about it. Dead and missing. I recognized her from one of the news articles I had read. Her name had once been Ethel. I leapt from the seat just in time as she snapped her hands out to grab me. A slow motion clip played through my mind of a frog shooting out its tongue at a fly. The irrational things that would go through your head in times of fear aren't all that irrational, you know. I was meant to be her little fly that night. I ran in the direction of town as fast as I could. As I ran, I looked back over my shoulder towards the bus stop, and what I saw only made me run faster. She was crawling into the woods. I'm no cross-country medalist, but I'm not too slow either. But as I ran, I could hear something in the woods catching up to me. As much as I tried, as much as I wanted to, I couldn't run any faster. My lungs were burning, tears were flowing down my face, and my shins ached with every slap of my shoe against the pavement. But still, whatever is in the woods was catching up to me. Headlights shone in the distance, like two angels in the dark. I began screaming at the top of my empty lungs as I ran head-on towards it. The thing in the woods started screaming too. It sounded, strangely enough, exactly like a human. The truck came closer, and closer, and closer, and so did the thing in the woods. I could hear it snapping branches as it veered towards the tree line. The truck stopped, and I ran to the passenger side door and tried to jerk it open, but it was locked. Out of the forest dashed the old woman with pasty skin that bounced up and down her face and bulging red eyes fixed maniacally on me. The driver unlocked the door and pushed it open, and I jumped inside. She reached out for me with a long-nailed hand, but I closed the door on it, and she shrieked. I screamed at the driver, "Drive! Just drive!" and pounded my fist on the lock. The tires peeled on the pavement for a long moment before we sped away. Leaning over the seat, I watched through the back window as the woman faded from the glow of the red taillights. "Oh my God, oh 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 my God," I repeated for God knows how long. I turned back in my seat and looked at the driver. He was in his mid-30s, with a thick beard, pale face, and a shirt, with a Geoforce logo on the sleeve. He stared ahead at the road. "She wanted to kill me. Oh my God, I've never been wanted dead before," I said with a wild laugh. He didn't laugh back. In fact, his expression didn't change at all. My stomach twisted into a knot. "Hey," I said. He didn't turn to look at me. "Hey," I said again, but louder. He still didn't turn. "Oh no, you're what she is," I screamed. The truck swerved across the road as he whipped his head towards me with a bewildered look on his face. "What the hell, boy? No, don't you ever say that to me," he yelled. He steered the car back into the lane and stared ahead, this time looking quite mad. "Oh, sorry. I just thought you were like her. I know this sounds crazy, but she's not human," he interrupted. "Yeah, human. You've seen her before?" "You could say that," he said distantly. "What does that mean?" "She comes from Geoforce. Well, technically the lady doesn't, but what she is comes from Geoforce, alright? The energy research place?" "Yeah, except we don't. I mean, they don't. Research energy. They research evil, to put it plainly." A small laugh wheezed out of my lips. I don't know why. It wasn't funny. He thought the same. go ahead and laugh. But if I hadn't saved your ass, that thing would have skinned you alive and wore you like pajamas. And you bloody well know it. He fumbled for a cigarette from the pack in the seat between us. I took out a cigarette, lit it, and passed it over. He rolled down the window and took a long drag. They stood evil. What makes it tick? First, they started by lassoing every sicko they could find, from loony bins and prisons. They made them all live together, fight together, breed together, and sat back with a clipboard and just watched. They did this for a few years, while looking into their DNA for something to peg the evil on. They wanted to grow their own fresh batch of bad. Is that how she was made? In a way. The military stepped in at a point and bought up the place, and that changed everything. They brought in these DNA samples, classified stuff that even I don't know where they came from, and just told us, told them, to splice it together. Splice together what Geoforce found and what the military brought. And then yeah, that's how she was made. Only it wasn't a human that they created. It was just something in a petri dish. But then somebody got infected by it, for a lack of a better word. And now, it's loose. You work for Geoforce. Is that where you're going right now? I tried to keep my pitch normal, but it creaked near the end. He turned towards me, keeping the car straight this time, and looked me square in the eyes. No, I'm never going back there. I'm skipping town tonight, and if anyone from Geoforce asks, we never met, you hear? I nodded. He turned back to the road with a pained expression. I've made a lot of mistakes in this life. I thought I was going to be something great, but then I got caught up with Geoforce, and once you do that, they make it awfully hard to leave, if you know what I mean. I'm glad I met you though, kid, because now I can leave this town knowing that I did something alright. In this sea of mess, I managed to throw out one life jacket. Where do you live? Oaken 12th. Okay, so here's what we're going to do. I'm going to take you home. You're going to lock all the doors and windows and sleep with a baseball bat beside you, or a gun if you have one. Then, first thing in the morning, you make up any excuse you have and get you and your family out of town. Tell your friends to do the same, okay? We were in the town center at this point. Our truck barreled down the main stretch, getting closer to Oak Road. Okay, I'll do that. All of it. Thank you. If it weren't for you, I wouldn't have made it. I thought I was a fast runner, but you weren't fast enough, I know. Nobody is. This your street? Yeah, the blue house on the left there is mine. He stopped in front of my house, leaned over me, and opened the door. I got out and held the door open. I looked down and noticed there was a long bloody fingernail stuck to the hinge. I picked it off and inspected it, before turning back to him. Is there anything I can do to stop this thing? Nope. We can't even estimate how many people it's taken. All I can do is tell you to run. It will catch up eventually, but pray you'll be an old man by then. Just run fast and for as long as you can. He reached over and slammed the door shut in my face. I dropped the nail to the ground and watched as he drove off. The only moving thing in the night, that I could see anyway. I ran inside, locked all the doors and windows, and stayed awake all night holding my dad's baseball bat. In the morning, I made up a good excuse. I even got my grandma in on it and told her to call my parents to tell them that her hubby had a stroke. And we left town the next day. I'm currently sitting in an airport terminal about to board our flight. Now you know what's out there, what's coming for us all. I may not be able to save it from coming, but I can save you from going to it. So, I let my final words to you be this. Never, ever, under any circumstance, take the old highway through Windermere.